B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich, and Danny Ainge now is a professional gambler living in Reno, Nevada. He has left the Boston Celtics to pursue his dream, and now Brad Stevens is the Celtics president of basketball operations, and he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Stevens, hello, sir.
Hi, guys. You sounded disappointing, and rightfully so.
I mean, this is a big letdown, I got to tell you. Danny brought it. No, Danny was great. Not disappointed at all, but I will tell you this, Brad, is that you and I have been in the same places several times. I have a 13-year-old son, and I have been to these basketball barns, and people will turn to me and they'll go, hey, Brad Stevens is here. You're on Sports Talk Radio. You know him? And I'll go, oh, that's how it works. Yeah, we're best friends. The media.
I'm in those places a lot. I enjoy going to those games. It's fun. Everybody always asks me if I'm there scouting, and I'm like, I probably wouldn't choose a 13 or 14 year old game here today to scout. But yeah, no, I'm here watching my son like everybody else.
Yeah, but you know the parents have gone like, all right, kid, Stevens is here.
That's right.
This is time to, this is a showcase game for you.
All those travel basketball games you attended.
Now, did you have to drive your kid during the worst of COVID? Did you have to drive your kid like far away and then sit in the parking lot?
So, you know what was, and obviously I was in the bubble.
Oh, that's right.
A large part of that. And then last year, when we were playing our season, we had such strict protocols and rules that, you know, almost luckily, when he was playing high school basketball, they wouldn't let parents go anyway, so we could only watch on stream, because I would not have been able to go anyways. Even in the spring AAU season last year, I did not go to any games until our season was over because of the protocols. They basically didn't want us anywhere during the season last year, masked or not. So it is nice to, you know, to be able to go again and to be able to throw I still throw my mask on in all of those settings just to be super duper safe, especially with, you know, with our team. But it's great to be able to go again and watch those kids play.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, we were talking to guys on the Bruins, and there was a player in particular that was young and single, and COVID protocols, because you don't, you know, you internalize things yourself, but you don't often think of athletes as, you know, regular people. And the thing was that the COVID protocols were, like, affecting him mentally enough that it was affecting him on the ice. You know, the NBA was just as strict as the NHL was. How hard was that navigating? Because it sucks for you, but you have a family, like, right? You have a home base. How much for these young guys that, you know, weren't around family, were isolated by themselves a lot? How difficult was that to navigate? And did that affect things, you think, on the court at all?
Oh, of course, but yeah. It wasn't just us, right? It was everybody.
Right.
And I think that was really well documented all the way through the bubble, right? So you start in the bubble and then the short turnaround and then the new season. It was my number one focus with our team last year and through the bubble, just because, you know, we knew that was going to be a significant, obviously you're dealing with a pandemic and you're dealing with all of the stress and anxiety that comes with that, because you're not, just like you, just like everyone, right? We're not just thinking about ourselves. We're thinking about how our family members are doing, how especially our older family members are doing, and wanting them to be safe. And and all that goes with that. So there's already like a layer of stress. And then, you know, when those protocols are in place, you know, being isolated when you're just going from game to game, if you can't get away from it somehow, in your own way, everybody's got their own way of doing it. I love to go for a walk or rent a bike when I'm on the road or whatever the case may be, just to take time to get away. That was one of the challenges of, you know, over the last year and a half. But, you know, everybody was going through that, and it was all even in that regard.
Yeah.
But that was real. And I'm glad, you know, I'm glad people have talked about that, because it is like these guys are human. They look superhuman when they're on the court, and they're amazing when they're on the court, but they are human.
Yeah, you go on walks. I went to rehab. It was a lot of, it's one and the same. We handled things the same exact way. Talking to Brad Stevens. All right, so you're coaching. That's difficult enough. You're juggling these personalities, and COVID comes into it. Like, when it comes down to now, like, you know, not being the head coach, going into the front office, was the stress of all that, I mean, the situation that you were in, it was so unprecedented. Does that make the decision to go into the front office easier? Was that season so difficult that this is almost a relief?
No, so I tried to really separate, you know, like everyone else, I think I tried to take the last 2 years and say, okay, you basically have to throw those out with regard to the challenges that they presented outside of just the normal. You know, I still always super thankful to be in the position you're in, right? Like, and to get an opportunity to coach the Boston Celtics. I have always thought, since my early 30s, I became a head coach at 30 at Butler. I had always thought that I wasn't going to be a person that coached into his late 50s, 60s, and 70s. And so, you know, I've always kind of kept an eye on what else there could be out there and when would be the appropriate time to transition. Danny approached me about retiring. He told me he was retiring, you know, in early April. And so, you know, we had a lot of talks about that. Ended up, you know, after it was all said and done, deciding, you know, after speaking to Wick and Steve and knowing the great group that we already had in place here, an opportunity presented itself that really I felt really good about. The first 2 months on this job were like nothing I've ever experienced, because, you know, it's so different than coaching. But it was, you know, and every day it's been invigorating. It's been really challenging. It's really hard. But we have great people in this building. You know, we were, the hardest part for me was when, you know, your own coaching staff, people that you have traveled with, built great relationships with, they may or may not be retained by a new coach. And that's part of the, like, the, a new coach needs to be able to bring in his own staff because of a comfort level and a feel that you need with the people that you're around. And so that was really hard, knowing that some of our assistants would ultimately be in a career flux. And but they've been good, and you can turn on the TV on any given night and you see a couple of my former assistants on other benches. And we have about half of my staff still here from last year, and everybody seems to be doing well. But that was a great source of angst for me. And then, you know, hiring a new coach and trying to do our best to manage the short and long term for this team, from a dollars and cents perspective, were just a small part of it. And thank goodness I got to keep everyone else around us here, who are the real experts, and I'm learning as we go.
Oh, yeah, because you mentioned, you say the first couple of months was like nothing you experienced. I mean, you jumped right into it. I mean, you didn't mess around. And on top of that, you, like you said, you'd been in a bubble with these guys. You'd been traveling with these guys, not let the players, let alone your staff. So do you think because you made big moves, do you think a little bit more personal for you since you were so close to those guys? I know Ainge was around, and I know Ainge was, but not like you were. So was that more difficult?
Really difficult. But I think at the end of the day, And I've always thought this. Sometimes you have to decide this when you're the head coach and you're deciding playing time. I mean, you don't want to have to bench somebody. You don't want guys not to play because it affects their bottom line. It affects their careers. It may affect their next opportunity, and you're close with them and tight with them. But your ultimate responsibility is to the Boston Celtics, to, you know, the New England region, to everybody that cheers for us. And we are all a team trying to work and represent, you know, everyone as well as we can, and recognizing that everyone's got to embrace a role within that team. So when you move to the front office, I mean, these decisions are a little bit bigger because, you know, when you have to obviously sign off on a trade, I mean, it's one of the things you learn in that first trade, especially with trading Kimba, which was super hard. One of the things you learn in that is, like, it's a lot easier to be the person that throws out the ideas than the person that says, yes, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
So that was a, you know, an aha moment for me. But it's been good. Again, I've got really good people here, you know, Mike Zarin and Austin and Allison Feaster and, you know, on down the line, Dave Lewin and Remy Cofield. Like, we have the benefit of continuity in the front office has made my transition so much smoother. And so that's where I've been really fortunate. I've leaned on them and leaned on their expertise quite a bit.
So go back to those first 2 months on the job, Brad. As Fred was saying, you jumped in with both feet and you were on the job and it was crazy. How many phone calls did you get in those first 2 or 3 days? Because I would imagine other GMs would reach out to a guy like you and try and test out the new guy and see what they can and can't get away with.
You know, not a ton. I know a lot of these people, right? So, you know, whether I've been in the league now 8 years, for the people that have been in the league longer, they used to come to our college practices. So I know a lot of the people that, you know, are on trade calls for the other team. And those that I don't know, it's easy to grab a coffee with, make a phone call, see at Summer League and spend a few minutes with. They're not hard relationships to build. And I think the rest of our staff that's still here have good relationships around the league. And so I heard from a lot of people, as you know, during that time, but mostly non-basketball executives. I think they probably realized I had a lot coming, and so they let me breathe a little bit.
Hey, Brad, yeah, you mentioned the Kemba Walker trade. Obviously, you reacquired Al Horford. Kemba did speak before the game this week, saying he was a little surprised that he was traded. Can you just kind of talk about how it was hard for you and in getting Al Horford back here in Boston?
No, that was really difficult. I mean, Kimba and Al, I think if you polled people around the league and you said, okay, who are the two of the better player, veteran, older teammates in the league that are in their 30s, everyone would say Kimba and Al. So that's the kind of people that we're talking about, right? We're talking about people that teammates enjoy being around, that bring a great attitude to the game, that bring a great attitude to their work. And, you know, and as I said before, I mean, that trade was, obviously it was unbelievable to have a chance to get Al back as part of it. But the baseline of that trade was for having the financial flexibility moving forward. And so, it was really more of a just thing for us from a basketball standpoint. Now, we were going to try to hold out and see if we could, you know, get a really good player back. And we just felt fortunate that Al was the one, you know, that was like, we felt like the best deal for us. And I'm really glad Al's here. I mean, Al's looked, you know, before he got sick, and he's now back the last couple of days. I don't know if he'll play tonight or not, but he's looked like he was 30. Like, he looks the same as when he came in when he was 30. He just has a quicker release on his jump shot because he shot, you know, way more than he did when he was in Atlanta. He's shot way more than the last 5 years with Boston, Philly, and OKC. So, I'm excited that Al's here. I'm excited Al's here to help lead our locker room, which is really important. You saw the other night that, you know, we had a lot of great performances and a lot of relentlessness and a lot of resilience, and we could have used just a little bit, right, just a little bit to get over the top. And I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, Al can help lead that and provide that.
Unfortunately, Brad, now with your new job, you have to deal with different kinds of things, and you've always been outspoken about letting your players express themselves, but then you have something that happened in the last couple of days from Enes Kanter, who is under fire now in China after talking about the president there. And as a head coach, if you answer questions about that, you get asked one way. Now that you're the guy in charge, do you have to have a conversation with Enes about what he said, or is that something else that just kind of continues on?
Yeah, my conversation with Enes was real short and sweet, and that is, you know, we're always going to support any of our players and their right to freedom of speech and expression, you know, and I think in my experience with the Celtics and the NBA, that's the way it's been, and that's the way I'll continue to be.
Well, listen, you could be in Brooklyn or Philly.
Yeah, things are a little worse there.
Yeah, there's, you could be worse. I mean, you could have that big headache. But there you go. Things have worked out for you, and you're not in that situation. Your players want to play. Congratulations. That's the first thing that you got going for you.
I don't know if you want me to, like, have a reaction to that.
It's nice. Everyone showed up. Like, it's nice.
Let me do my best Danny impersonation. He'd listen to the question, and he'd just go, right.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
and then we'd ask him if he farted or something, and he would go on his business. All right, Brad Stevens, who was very fortunate, all his players did show up, no matter what he says, is the Celtics president of basketball operations. Thank you so much for the time, sir, and best of luck. We appreciate it.
All right, guys, be well.
All right, take it easy. Yeah. I'll get him. You give me a couple months.
You're just warming him up.
You give me a couple months.
I got you.
I'll get him. Don't you worry. You give me a couple weeks.
A couple months. I'll give you a couple weeks.
I'll give you a couple weeks, baby.
Before Thanksgiving.
I got him.
All right.
Don't you worry. It's coming. All right. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rhodes. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's 98.5 Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Fred. Which, of course, now because he doesn't take part in practice and that becomes public, then the players have to answer questions about him. And it kind of culminated in a New York Daily News article in which basically all of the players said, you know what, we're all going out to dinner now. We didn't used to do that before. Basically, the players are taking not-so-thinly veiled shots at Simmons. They know that he's faking this. They know his back is fine. They know mentally he is just fine. And it's turned into a big, big problem.
Mentally, he's not fine, by the way. Mentally,
well,
he's a basket
mentally,
case.
He's acting like a seven-year-old.
Well, mentally, he screwed up and has an aversion to shooting. I mean, he was afraid to shoot.
All of this, obviously, is his fault. Created this.
So what he should have done, because they could have not stopped, there was no way they could not pay him. What he should have done is after the season, he should have just said nothing. Then at the beginning of camp, go say if it's this big a deal. No, what he should have said is at the end of the season, said, listen, respect my privacy. I need some time. I'm going through some stuff. And everyone would have left him alone. Then he could have privately gone to the 76ers and asked for a trade, showed up to training camp, played, and then they would have traded him.
But then
he would have gotten what he wanted.
Right.
But like so many of these players who shoot themselves in the foot, like I'll give you an example of Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers, nothing has happened yet. But Aaron Rodgers doesn't like that they draft Love, because what he sees is Love usurping him as the starting quarterback.
Sure.
So he wills that situation into existence. Now he stops it at the last minute because he realized his hands were tied. But instead of just expressing, okay, you know, this sucks, then he has an MVP year, then it's obvious Love is not usurping him, and he instead wills that to happen. I don't understand why these players do this. They will they will these things to happen. Like, so Simmons obviously is very embarrassed about his play. And so instead of, you know, and then maybe he's a little pissed at Doc and Embiid said something about it. So instead of getting to happen what he wants to happen, which is to get traded to another team to play basketball, he wills this situation where it becomes all people talk about is what a mental case he was. He should have gone to the 76ers and said, listen, I'm pissed off at you guys. You guys shouldn't have said that stuff. I want you to trade me. It showed up to camp, and then with the note with everyone, and then if he had to pull the power play at the beginning of the season instead of whining and acting like it was everyone's problem all year, all off season, and then leaving them within a situation where they can't get rid of your ass. Show that you got over what was hurting you in the playoffs. Show it. God has given you that body and that skill. I mean, the idea that you're that athletic at that size is insane. No one else is. Instead of being thankful for it, you take advantage of it. Go ahead.
The fallout from this, though, Fred, is even worse than anyone could have expected. As we were just talking about, now his teammates don't hate like him, don't want to play with him.
Yep.
And his trade value is at an all-time low.
Yes.
Daryl Morey.
Which is all self-inflicted.
Right.
He did it all to himself.
But here's the thing. Ben Simmons has basically declared war on the franchise. I'm not playing until you trade me. Fine. Now the team has fired back. Daryl Morey, the GM, the guy who holds Brad Stevens' job at the Philadelphia 76ers, did an interview with our sister station during afternoon drive yesterday, the Fanatic down in Philadelphia. And basically, I'm paraphrasing here, saying, buckle up. We're not moving until we get what we want.
I think he actually said buckle up.
I think he might have said buckle in. But but the point is, you know, you're going to threaten us with this? Fine. Be prepared to sit. We're fine with you sitting. We'll take our chances with you sitting. If we can't get what we want for you, you can sit on the sideline and get nothing.
He wouldn't have lost $1. He wouldn't have lost $1. He could have gotten everything he wanted and not lost a penny.
And now his teammates, even if the Sixers can convince him to get on the floor, that's going to mess with the chemistry because the players don't want to play with him.
Yeah, so everything he didn't want to happen, he willed into happening. He willed it into this. Now he's stuck with the 76ers, and it's entirely his fault.
4 years left on that contract.
He is unbelievable. I mean, these guys, man. Like, you know, it's all about, like, you know, I'm playing chess, and I have this strategy, and I'm strategizing. Like, you know, Kyrie's always mumbling this nonsense. And then they will themselves into the worst-case scenario. Like, it's self-sabotage themselves.
Even when
couldn't you have sat down after the season and said, all right, I can't play here anymore. I'm going to sit down with my agent, and we're going to figure out a way to get me out of here. And I'm going to keep my mouth shut, and I'm going to get what I want. I'm going to find a way out of here. Because really, by you whining and crying or having your people whine and cry about what Doc and Embiid said, no one feels any sympathy for you because you were on television sucking. So, like, what happened. Like, so you're not winning any sympathy points. And if that was your goal in the first place, that's a childish goal that you're never going to get. No one feels bad for you. They could have. If you said, like, I need some time. Like I need some time. I'm going through some stuff mentally. I need some time. Can you please express, you know, give me some space at the end of the season? And then people would have felt bad for you. Then you show up to camp. And you play, and you get traded. That's all. Instead, you self-sabotage. So what was the one thing he didn't want to do? Play for the 76ers and probably lose money. So now he's stuck with the 76ers losing money. And you're right. And if he plays, they're all going to hate him, and it's going to be worse even than it was before.
And you know what the other part of it is? I think he took a look at what happened with James Harden a year ago in Houston. You remember he was supposed to be at training camp with the Rockets, and he was at some birthday party in Atlanta.
Yes.
And
he's
all of that.
Babies.
And he thought that, oh, okay, I'll be like James Harden. I'll shoot my way out of town, and Philadelphia will trade me. The problem is, as good as Simmons is, he's not Harden. Harden just got voted one of the 75 greatest players of all time.
Harden didn't have a mental breakdown in the playoffs and refused
to shoot.
And
that's the other part of it. Harden is a better player.
Yeah.
So not only does Simmons not have the status, he's just not as good.
Well, he's coming off where he's at his lowest. Yep. I mean, he's coming off being at his lowest.
Played this wrong about five different ways.
So if you sat with your agent, someone who was honest with you, they go, right now, Ben, listen, right now your value's at its lowest because we all know, and it's a shame, you flipped out at the end of the playoffs and couldn't shoot. So here's what we're going to have to do. You're going to have to spend the offseason working on your shooting, which I'm sure he did anyway. We're going to then have to have you go to training camp, and then you're going to have to prove to everyone, play some preseason games, and prove to everyone that you're back. And then they can move you. And then that would have been the way to do it. Yeah, Harden's probably second to last game, he probably put up 50 in Houston. Yeah, it's a totally different thing. They could get something in return for him. People wanted Harden. I'd want Simmons if his head was on straight, but now I wouldn't. I mean, I was the biggest Simmons sympathizer in the world.
Even if you get him, even if you somehow get him and Philadelphia trades him to you, you're really not sure what you're going to get. You have no idea what you're going to get.
Well, say I trade Lillard for him, I'm a worse team.
Yes.
I mean, because I'm worse with Ben Simmons. Even Ben Simmons at his best, I'm worse if Lillard's not on my team.
If Simmons' head is screwed on straight,
you're still worse.
Brooklyn would beat down your door to trade for him.
Yeah, but then you got the whole Kyrie thing. Fred, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I think what it is these guys like Rogers, Simmons, there's certain athletes that have low self-esteem and want to feel like they have control over their destiny. So they do will it to happen. They see the writing on the wall and they say, geez, I'm not going to let them trade me. I'm not going to let Love take my spot. I'm going to take control. It's like self-sabotage on purpose because they want to feel like they have control over it.
Yeah, like it's like this like weird, like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's this weird need to self-sabotage that somehow that makes you feel some sort of control. Like, if you're going to do this to me, I'm going to speed up the process. I mean, the Rodgers thing to me was hysterical. So I don't want Love to take my job, so I'm going to make it so Love takes my job.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's crazy. I mean, it's crazy. Then you go out and have an MVP year, and it's obvious Love's not going to take your job. And then, so what? So what do you want? So what? So then you go and go crazy. Then you go on the Pat McAfee show, and Pat McAfee wears wife beater T-shirts and stands up during the whole interview because it's not your grandfather's show.
Did Simmons really think he had nothing to prove? Did he really think he had nothing to prove? So
the thing about Simmons is we all saw it. Like, man, it was on TV.
It wasn't in a secret. It was on national television.
It was on TV. Like, it's not
in the playoffs in game 7.
Right. I saw it.
He didn't go for a dunk. He passed it.
Yes. I saw it. I was watching it live. If I saw a basketball game not involving the Celtics.
That's a good point.
Then everyone
saw it. Then everyone
I saw it live on my television screen. If I saw a NBA basketball game that didn't involve the Celtics.
You got the casual fan to watch. That's a good point.
I am a casual fan like you wouldn't believe. I am Captain Casual. I'm wearing flip-flops right now. Do you think I'm checking out every NBA game? I could care less what happens in that league. But I watched that game. I was rooting for Philadelphia, too. Yeah.
Philadelphia is screwed, but they're handling it perfectly. The Sixers are handling it perfectly. Doc Rivers is handling it perfectly. Daryl Morey is handling it perfectly.
That league is, like, just gotten out of control. I mean, like, I get it, like, giving the players control and stuff, but, I mean, at the bottom line is you should the players should be playing basketball. You know, they should get the money that they deserve, and they should, they have all this power in that league, but it's not enough. It's just not enough. Kyrie just like wants to play when he wants to play. Like, no, you can't do that. The president of the United States can't understand. I don't want to be president today. You got to be. With your power comes responsibility.
Yeah.
And your responsibility is you have to play basketball.
And in reality, there are maybe three guys in the league that can get away with this.
Yeah, but
total.
But like,
and Kyrie's not one of those guys, and Ben Simmons is sure as hell not one of those guys.
Yeah, but and it takes a lot of years of not doing that to become one of those guys.
Yes.
Like a LeBron. Like
LeBron, Durant, and Harden. And anybody else? I think that's pretty much it.
Maybe Steph Curry.
Pull crap like that.
Giannis or Curry. But Giannis stayed, and he got rewarded with the championship. All right, the stack is coming up, including, I found, unfortunately, footage of Quentin Tarantino, who loves feet, by the way. I found footage of Quentin Tarantino that made me respect him a little bit less, and so much more. We will be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is the home of the Bruins and the Celtics.
It is nothing but a thrill a minute.
And these guys.
Oh, my Lord, what could come next?
Dutcher and Rich on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Stack. 98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Dutcher and Rich. This is the... this is the physical. This is the time at the doctor. This is the. I refuse to get the prostate exam, John. I know you just got in one.
Just went through it. Yep. Actually, you know what?
Joe, you a prostate exam guy?
I'm not at that age yet, I don't believe.
You're 40.
39.
So I actually kept track of how long it took this time because you guys were talking about it and I thought it took. Didn't take any time at all. It's like 3 seconds.
No.
It was
3 seconds too long.
Yes. I was worried that it was going to take like 15. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, but this is the one I think I walk out of there with a prescription pad. I think this is the one.
But, John, you also have had, you know, other things happen to you.
Yes, that's true.
So, like, could it get worse?
That's a good point. You know what I mean? When you put it in perspective, Joe, you're right. But it's still not pleasant.
Yeah. See, yeah, because John's, like, you know, thin and in good shape and everything. But, you know, he's only got one ear.
Yeah.
Everyone falls apart.
Once you get by a certain age.
Yeah, because I have a feeling that I'm going to go in there and they're going to be like, hey, fatso, like, all right. And then I'm like, you got to fix this sleeping thing. You got to make it so I can sleep.
You think you've crossed over that line that I crossed over?
Yes, I know I have.
Okay.
I think that this one is like they start talking to me gravely about. Because I used to just go in and be afraid about my liver. And now I'm not worried about my liver. So, like, you know, but that was the only thing I was worried about. And now, like, I'm going to go in and they're going to be like, your liver's fine, but everything else is falling completely apart. I took my blood pressure last night. I'm like, how is my blood pressure this high? It's like insanity. And then I took it like 6 more times and it lowered gradually every single time.
Yeah.
But, like, I never have had high blood pressure before. I mean, I'm like a fatso. And, like, my wife's like, you don't even eat that much. I go, I don't know what the hell's going on. Just a big fat mess.
Stress, bro, man. You get this highly rated show every day. You got to come up with content.
I'll tell you what it is. It's these hours are just killers. Just killers. How Rich can go to some EDM festival after the show on Thursday, I don't know how the hell he's doing it.
Zipped off to the airport after the show was over.
Like, if I went to this festival, first of all, I Lord knows what I'd put in my body, but if I went to this festival and to do the show that Monday morning, flying back from Vegas that Sunday, I mean, are you crazy? Like, I wouldn't have gone to the Patriots game if it was a 4 o'clock game. I wouldn't have gone because I couldn't have handled it.
Yeah, I think you're going to have a blast, dude.
I'm going to have a good time.
I've gone to so many pads. I love it, man. The parking lot is where it's at.
So you got the tailgate. The tailgate's locked.
Zolak got me into the tailgate. I got the tickets on my phone.
And how early do you show up for that?
I will get there at 11:30.
Okay, so Milo's on board with this?
Yes.
Okay. Scotty, you got him into the tailgate?
Scotty hooked me up.
He's happy?
Scotty,
you're happy?
Any alumni in there?
Yeah, he's not going to know who the hell.
Do you show up at that tailgate, Zoe?
No,
that's beneath him. Okay,
so I think I do. I might go up to the at halftime. I probably will go up to the booth.
Yeah,
all right.
Because Scott said it's very well marked. It's they've got their whole thing.
Maybe
happening.
You'll see Sarge.
He'll be there. There you go.
Bring him up to come see the No?
Wait, does Sarge do the in-game announcements?
He does, yes.
Yes. So, like, after every play, it's Sarge?
You're going to hear John Rook say that's good for another Patriots third down, but when it comes to, like, the ads, or, hey, looking in the left end zone, it's the Patriots cheerleader.
Oh, is he, like, in the crowd with a mic?
Well, he's
the in-game guy, but he's not walking around in the crowd.
He's not that.
I see.
He's not a hype man.
Very good. All right, because, yeah, that I don't know. I've never seen that at a football game before. I've only seen that at the arenas. So I'll hear Sarge.
You're going to hear a lot, and he's great.
So I'll basically know like 1,000 people that are at that game.
You're going to know everybody.
There you go.
I'm going to know everyone at that game.
It's going to be a very comfortable surrounding for
you. I
wish
I was there, Fred. Yeah. I would have hung out with you guys.
Well, I got the car service. We'll see how that goes. Well, Quentin Tarantino, he wants to make a comedy. He's saying he wants to make a comedy, and he says he wants it to... be a spaghetti western, a wacky spaghetti western in which the comedy is largely derived from racially tone-deaf casting. According to Tarantino, the Mexican bandino is Italian, the hero is an American, the bad sheriff is German, the Mexican saloon girl is Israeli. And they're all speaking a different language. Now, I don't know if he's kidding or not, but it doesn't matter because did you know that at one point Quentin Tarantino hosted Saturday Night Live?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember.
When was this? How long ago was this?
I believe the year was 1994, and here it is, ladies and gentlemen, his monologue.
Here I am hosting Saturday Night Live. One of the things that's so terrific about being on this show is it's a piece of television history. So this week, while I was getting ready for the show, I got to thinking, what would be better for the monologue than to do my tribute to the greatest moment in the history of television? Now, for a TV aficionado like me, it'd be perfect. But, you know, when I had to pick out what the greatest moment in television history was, I mean, I got messed up. There's so many of them. I mean, there's Walter Cronkite's tears reporting, "We've lost the president." There's Little John Jr.'s salute at the funeral. There's Elvis or the Beatles on Sullivan. So, you know, how do you choose a single greatest moment from a medium that has had so many great moments? But then it came to me. In fact, I'm actually a little embarrassed because it's so obvious what the single greatest moment in television history is. See, there's this one episode of Bewitched. Starts Serena, always a good sign. Now, on this show, Serena wanted to break into rock and roll. And this was like their official rock and roll episode. I dream of Jeannie had one too. And she wrote this really cool rock song. And the name of the song was "I'm Gonna Blow You a Kiss in the Wind." I don't know if you remember that one or not. As a tribute to the single greatest moment in television history, I would like to do that song for you tonight. Hit it, Cheryl!
Wherever you are tonight, a feeling tells me that you look out of sight.
And it goes on for 3 minutes.
Jesus.
It's Quentin Tarantino.
I would have preferred Johnny Bravo, but that's just me.
Ew.
I'm a Tarantino fan. I actually pretty much love
Could you sit through everything. Jackie Brown?
Yeah.
The 70s, do you?
I got to tell you, I loved Django. I thought that was awesome.
Yes, that was a good movie. But I saw Pulp Fiction.
I love.
Then I went to the theater to see Jackie Brown, and I walked out hating Quentin Tarantino for a while.
I didn't love Jackie Brown, but I like it. You know, maybe it's because I like it because he did it. I don't know.
You can sit through that. It's a 2.5 hour film.
Yeah, I've watched it a couple of times.
Really, and I believe a half an hour of it is like some just ode to Pam Grier, who's an attractive woman.
Did she have to take off her shoes in this?
Of course. I mean, there's a big...
She's now on Real Housewives or something.
You knew Tarantino has the foot fetish, right?
I did not know that. I heard
you really?
Say it.
Oh, it's well known.
No, have you seen now in his movies, like he just is ravenous about feet. He can't get enough of them.
Even in Pulp Fiction. Remember Uma Thurman taking her shoes off and dancing?
Yeah. I mean, she has to take those bad boys off and skedaddle. Jackie Brown, what have you stepped in?
Quentin Tarantino, DA.
The sequel is Jackie Brown steps on an anthill.
Loves feet in his films, that's right.
Yes, and there was an episode of the Tyra Banks show where I have to tell you, he comes out and she puts her feet right in his lap. And nope. he doesn't know what to do. He's over the moon with these feet right in his lap.
Yep.
He can't get enough of them. So there you go. Quentin Tarantino wants to make a wacky spaghetti western. I got this physical coming up. Oh, boy.
You're going to be fine, Fred. You are. You're going to be fine. It's not going to be as bad as you think it is.
I don't know.
Maybe you can think about
maybe the last 24, 48 hours haven't been the best for you.
I wonder if...
I'm convinced you're going to be fine.
You hear about people that they go to like get a checkup and then they, the next thing you know, they're in the hospital. I wonder if this is one of those.
Oh, come on.
Where they take my blood pressure and my vitals and they're like, get
this
guy.
They call the ambulance?
And they're like, get this guy to a hospital immediately.
Call 911 stat.
Like, yeah, like we don't have the things that are needed in this office for you to stay alive for the next 24 hours.
Sorry. Martha, could you get the hospital on?
Yes. We literally do not have the equipment required to keep this man alive for the next 24 hours.
I think it'll be fine.
All right.
I wouldn't worry too much. Now watch. I'm going to get a phone call later. I'm going to get blamed for this.
So we took calls on famous people to come to grade schools. I told you you came to mine. Sixth grade, Sacred Heart Roslindale.
Yeah, you were doing the thing. You were doing your stuff.
You were throwing passes and breaking the hands of sixth graders?
No, he was kicking balls into the backstop.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah, he went to some school.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, well, Scott Zolak, thank you very much. I have my tickets to the official Patriots tailgate. I will be doing that. If I see you at the Patriots game, know that your home field advantage has been completely negated because I will be there. What's that? I will bring you alcohol. I will. Do you drink during the games? Yeah. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman have beers. Every game
Maybe
they
Romo's
have.
Romo's been doing it too.
Yeah, well, I think Romo might have lost control of it a little bit.
Yeah, Romo's not coming back here, so.
Like, see, yeah. Jack Buck and Troy Aikman, I think it's the idea of, like, you know, sitting down, like, this is going to make it feel like we're in someone's living room. I think Tori Romo might have gone, like, if I don't do this, it's going to be a bad scene. All right, well, we will all be back the whole show on Monday if Rich survives his EDM festival that he's at in Vegas.
I think it'll be fine. I'm curious, though, to hear stories about everyone else around him.
And then Nicholas is coming back. So, yeah. I mean, we have Rich returning from Vegas. Nicholas returning from his big Turks and Caicos vacation. We'll know if the Red Sox are going to the World Series. And our massive, massive syndication starts on Monday. So it's going to be woof. It's going to change everything. All right. If I'm here on Monday, that means that...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.